This is April 19th, 2016, in Roseville, Florida, Manashiksha 8, 9, and 10. And the qualification of not wanting to be a good or a bad person, but a devoted person to Krishna. Of seeing Lord Chaitanya as Krishna and Guru as Krishna's friend. And then we went through the different obstacles. The first one is about that we have to be careful about what we say. What we say. I was just talking about that today with one devotee who said that people will call her up for advice and they just call her up and just say, "Let me tell you about my problems," without even saying, "Is this a good time? Are you busy?" You know what I was saying, how we reveal ourselves through our speech. So what we talk about, which reveals who we are and also forms where we're going. And then the next thing is what we say, and then what we do, what our actions are, that our actions need to be in line with our ideals, and then
what we think,
what we want, what are our desires, and finally what we really crave, what are our deepest cravings, and to look at those, what we say, what we do, what we want, what we really crave. And so this is all now gone. So we've gotten rid of the prostitute. What was the other one?
Tigress.
The tigress, then the...
The donkey pee.
The donkey pee.
The highway robbers.
The highway robbers and...
The
woman with the man with the mask.
Right. The dancing disloyal woman who's consorting with pretense and eating. What is she eating?
A dead dog.
So they're all gone. They're out of our lives. And now we're going to come to perfection. So this is we have just 2 days left today. We're going to do 8, 9, and 10, and tomorrow 11 and 12. Now, although these are the verses about what happens at perfection, they can also be applied even to one who's just starting on the path of bhakti yoga. Now, of course, someone who's just starting on the path is going to apply them a little differently than somebody who's already on the path of perfection. So they'll be understood differently and they'll be applied differently, but the principles are still useful and helpful. Okay? In fact, a lot of these can even be done in the beginning, even though they're here at the end. They can be done on some level and in some form in the beginning. Okay, everybody ready to sing 8? Everybody ready? Yata dusa tvam meda vaya disha sasya pikripaya Yata mayam prema pretam apiyada jujvalamasya Yata shigandharva vajana virarya Even though I am a cheater, the Lord's mercy can drive away my inherent wicked nature, give me the glowing nectar of divine love, and inspire my heart with the process to worship Sri Gandharvika. Therefore, O mind, with pleading words, you should worship Sri Girihari here in Vrindavan. What you notice here is now gone. What's gone?
My inherent wicked nature.
Well, that's going to be gone. But something that we've been struggling with so far in Manashiksha is now gone. What's gone?
Self-deception.
Self-deception, yes. There's no more self-deception. And no more what? You told us to give it. First verse, you said you got to give this up. We finally gave it up here.
Pride.
I'm a cheater and I have a wicked nature. Right? And someone said to me the other day, someone says you're a horrible, evil person. I said, yeah. Of course, you know, the other person's always going, well, what did you do? You know. The acharyas, they all describe themselves like this. They all describe themselves as I am the lowest of the low. Right? You ever wonder about those things? Why are they talking like that? I am more sinful than Jagai and Madai. For those of you not familiar, so Jagai and Madai were born in a very first class priestly family. But they were robbers and rapists and arsonists and murderers. And here's the same person who's saying, I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madai. What is he talking about? He hasn't performed any of those sins in his life. So the devotee feels this way. Why? What is this cheating and wickedness that the devotee is authentically feeling?
Lack of pride.
Well, definitely lack of pride. But what are they? This is authentic. Okay? This is not phony. In what ways do they feel that they're a wicked cheater? Yes?
Maybe just by having a material body.
Okay, but the material body is a symptom of?
Aversion to Krishna.
Aversion to Krishna, yes. And so you remember until this point, the devotee, what was the devotee proud of in the previous verse?
Being a good devotee.
Being a good devotee, exactly. The root of pride is I'm a saint. Okay, I can't be God, but at least I can be a saint. You see? So there was this pride. That's the last thing to go. That's the driving engine of all the deceit. I'm a saint. And this honesty is, I'm a rebel against God. Therefore, I am just a wicked cheater. And the devotee feels this way, even if in their life they've never done anything that would be considered criminal. And they genuinely feel this way. They genuinely feel this way, and they don't feel that gross criminal activities are worse than their mentality. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I feel happy at seeing others suffer. There's a German word for that. What is it?
Schadenfreude?
Something like that. Being happy at others' misery. And pretty much all of us conditioned souls feel this way. Prabhupada says nobody wants to admit it. But why is there always news about celebrity divorces and celebrity drug problems? And you know, people like to read this. Oh, some big person has a problem. Yay! You know, they like watching fictional and truthful TV shows about other people's problems. Yes. And when other people are happy, we don't like it so much. As long as they're not as happy as I am, it's okay. But, you know, if they get a better car than I've gotten, or a more attractive spouse, or a bigger house, or it's disturbing. So this mentality, and a lot of you are going to listen to me and just say, this is a bunch of nonsense, but I'm telling you, it's the truth. The mentality of enjoying the suffering of others. That, by the way, is the essence of meat eating. Meat eating is enjoying this. I'm enjoying the suffering of another creature. I'm taking pleasure. My pleasure is directly related to the suffering of this other creature. But all material happiness has this somewhere in it. That I'm enjoying at someone else's expense in some way. And you may not think this is true, but I guarantee you that at a certain point of spiritual life, you'll see the truth of it in your heart. And when you see that, then you'll see that this essential quality of I take pleasure in others' misery is not any different in the nature of the thing from those who grossly do this. You know, the thief, what is the thief doing? They're enjoying stealing somebody's things. Their pleasure is directly related to having caused pain to somebody else, isn't it? Anybody here prepared to say they never stole anything? It's a general mood. You know, the rapist, the arsonist, the murderer, the cheater, they're all, and they like this. Oh, you know, I got something by hook and by crook. And there's all kinds of ways in which we do this. We do this whenever we think we're better than others. And I can ask you to raise your hand. Do you ever enjoy feeling that you're better than others? In any way. Do you ever enjoy feeling you're better than others because you don't enjoy feeling you're better than others? Do you know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, well, I'm so humble, therefore I'm better than others. Just see how great I am. It's just the woman in the heart with the dead dog. I'm such a saintly person. You know, or I'm a vegetarian. Any of this where I'm taking pleasure in the concept of being better than others. It's the same thing. It's the same thing as taking pleasure by raping someone or stealing their money or killing someone or eating an animal. It's essentially the same thing. Not at the same degree, obviously. And not the same kind of karmic reaction. But it's essentially the same thing. So with deep humility, and some of you may be saying, that is the craziest thing I've ever heard. I will assure you, and if this really bothers you, then you probably shouldn't engage in bhakti yoga, but I will assure you that if you chant Hare Krishna, you will see this at some point. I promise you that at some point you'll see, wow, I really have this problem, and you want to give it up. So the devotee at this point has actually given it up. The person at this point in Mana Shiksha, they've given up this tendency to want to enjoy at the expense of others. That's gone. It's just gone. They're at the point where they're happy at others' happiness, and they feel sad at others' sadness. They have real empathy, and they have real connection with all living beings. They're really and truly at this point. So when they're talking about cheating and their wicked nature, they're really talking about something in the past. Does that make sense to everyone? They're talking about something that's in the past, that's over, but they feel some sorrow for it. Now, it's a sweet sorrow. It's the kind of sorrow you feel when you realize, I'm sure we've all had this experience, there's someone that we love, that we care about, and we hurt them in some way. And we may not even realize that we hurt them, even though they've told us. They said, you do this thing, it really bugs me, it really hurts me. And we've kind of heard it, and we didn't really hear it. And at a certain point, we hear it. At a certain point, we understand, wow, I really, after you've all had this experience, and you go to the person and you apologize genuinely, because you value your relationship with them and you value that person more than your ego and your pride, and whatever it was you were doing that was hurting you. Yes, have we all had this experience? And when you go to them and you say, really, truly, genuinely, I am sorry, it's a sweet sadness, because if they accept you and they forgive you, you know, I get this mental picture, like you're sitting on the couch next to your friend and you're crying, and they put their arm around you and they say, it's okay. It's okay. So this is the point here, that the devotee says, I can now see that I have been a materialist, that I have been selfish, that I have been greedy, that I have done the ultimate evil, which is to get my pleasure at other suffering. There's simply nothing more evil than that. You know, whether you do that in a gross, horrible way, like you run a concentration camp in Nazi Germany, or whether you do that by going, oh good, I'm glad that he didn't get the promotion. You know, you see this thing and you say, well, I am a wicked person. And I am so sorry. And I'm really sorry. And you can give me three things. So now there's no pride. And I really want to emphasize to everybody how sweet this is. It is so sweet. Because this is not just your friend on the couch. This is God. Your best friend. The perfection. Who has no fault. And only love. And only forgiveness. For us. Only. And it's just been waiting. Offering this love. And offering this forgiveness. And just waiting for us to have the authenticity and the honesty to say, ooh, I haven't been acting very nice. You say the three things, and it's just so sweet. Just imagine being filled with the sweetness of the love and the forgiveness of your best friend or your spouse or your mother or your child or whoever. Billions and billions and billions and billions of times. And being accepted back fully into this relationship of love. So you can drive away this nature. You can make me a truly empathic, caring, compassionate person. You can restore me to who I really am. Because that's who we are as a soul. We're not, although it says my inherent, it's not really inherent to the soul. So you can restore me through your love. Then you can give me the glowing nectar of divine love, and you can engage me in worshiping Gandharvika. So we're going to look at each of these. So although I'm wretched and a cheater, you can drive away my wicked nature. You can make a flower grow in my dirt. You can restore me. You can bring me to real spirituality. And in every genuine spiritual tradition, if it's a genuine spiritual tradition, they're going to teach this. I mean, one difference between Krishna consciousness and a lot of the religions in the world today is that we teach that we are an eternal being. We were not created in our mother's womb. We were not created in this world. We are an eternal being, and we are a spiritual being. And therefore, our inherent nature is pure good. The evil that we've taken on is more like these hands have taken on this dirt, but the dirt is superficial to them. The dirt doesn't go into the skin. So our wickedness and our evil is not ours, really. It doesn't belong to us. It's like if you drop the diamond in the sewage, but the diamond remains pure. It just becomes covered. So we don't have, our Vaishnava philosophy is not one of original sin. We don't say we're born into sin, we exist into sin. That would be a strange God that creates beings already sinful. Wouldn't that be an odd God who creates beings that are inherently sinful and inherently wicked? I can't quite get my head around why you would want to love and serve such a God. It doesn't seem very fair. But no, we've existed eternally as pure souls, and we voluntarily, foolishly, have accepted this exploitive mentality. So we're really asking for a restoration. Prabhupada uses the word re often. Revival, return, go back to our original nature. So our original nature is spiritual. So that's what we're saying. We're saying, please, by your grace, give me back my original nature. Give me back my original relationship. Give me back everything, and help me to be free of this artificial thing. We can think of it even in this world. So generally speaking, so a baby's not born smoking and drinking. You know, if the mother's smoking and drinking, then perhaps. But, you know, in our healthy, normal state, we're not born doing these things. But we may artificially take them on. We may artificially smoke and drink. And then we need to be restored to our original position of health. Does that make sense to everyone? And you say, why do people smoke? And I'm sorry if I'm offending anybody here who smokes, but is smoking a rational choice?
No.
It's not a lie. It's not like logical, you know, where I think smoking will make me, you know, smell nice and be attractive. Right? But once somebody takes that up, they may need some help. They may need a doctor's help or a hypnotist's help or some kind of program to get free of this thing that they've artificially taken. So this is the request of the devotee at this stage of perfection. You know, you please help. It's by your grace, Lord. And there's no trace of I'm a great person, I'm a saintly person, I'm a great devotee. That's gone. That's gone. Such a relief, actually. It's actually a relief to say, whatever greatness I have is by your grace. Again, this is the pretense. We don't have to pretend anymore. What do they call it in psychology? The imposter syndrome, that all of us feel this imposter syndrome. You know, that I'm pretending to be. So at this point, there's no pretense. There's no masks. There's no need to try to impress anybody. Does that sound nice? And then I can be this perfect person by the grace of God forever. Then the next request is, give me glowing nectar to drink. So before this, the devotee was swimming in an ocean of nectar, yes? To get rid of the donkey ear, and getting a jewel of love for Krishna to get rid of the prostitute and the tigers. So the jewel is external and localized, and the ocean is external and pervasive. But now that the heart is clean, now that the chaste ladies of love have entered the beautiful city of the heart, now love can come internal. So now, in this state of complete authenticity, with no more pretense, the devotee is praying, please give me the nectar of love of God to drink. Let it fill me internally. It's interesting, Krishna talks about how the mode of goodness means all the gates of the body are illumined by knowledge. So this is even a higher principle of spiritual love. Now, we will note here that it's one nectar. It's not differentiated. Tomorrow we're going to get into five nectars and how it becomes more differentiated and individualized. But this is, there's been some awakening of spirituality way back in verse 3. But now this is the full thing. A And here's Radha Krishna pouring glowing nectar, like that's what's my glowing nectar, effulgent nectar, into the hearts of the devotees. Right? There's no more burning, there's no more dog meat, it's all just one is simply illumined. And this illumination comes also, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the rays of the Ladini Shakti. Ladini Shakti is the pleasure potency of God. The rays of the pleasure potency enter into this clean heart of the devotee, and they make visible our eternal spiritual form. The mirror of the consciousness is completely cleaned. So that up before this point, there's some idea of our spiritual relationship, like before the sun rises, and we get some idea of what things look like, and that can even happen back in verse 3, some idea of who we are really, eternally, our real identity. But here it's completely visible. We really see, wow, this is who I am. This is my real form, this is my real nature. So, and then the third thing that the devotee asked for, he said, please, you by your mercy, you restore my spiritual nature. You put this glowing nectar in my heart. And then engage me in the worship of Gandharva. So someone asked, at one of my other seminars, well, we talk about praying to Radharani to get Krishna. Here's going to Krishna who gives us to Radharani. And we have this nice verse in Bhagavad Gita, Mahatmanastumam Partham Daivim Prakritimashritam, that the great souls are under the shelter of the divine nature. So our Vaishnava philosophy, the Vedic philosophy, has the ultimate truth as both masculine and feminine. And the feminine nature of the absolute truth is of compassion and pleasure. So when one is fully humble in one's life, one's heart is lit up with the glowing nectar and the rays of pleasure, then one takes shelter of the personality of the highest pleasure and compassion. And that is Gandharva or Gandharvika, the artistic singer. And I really like the little close up here, the mood that the artist has shown. This is the realized soul that Krishna is taking, come under the shelter of Radha. Come under the shelter of Radha, the supreme universal mother and the mistress of all of the, you know, we struggled with the word mistress because it has another connotation now in the West, but the feminine leader, the Ishwari, of all of service and of all the saintly persons who are surrendered to the Lord. She is in charge of everyone who's rendering service to Krishna. Someone says, please put me under her shelter. Isn't that a nice mood in this day? Really sweet, huh? Really, really sweet. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary quotes wonderful verses like, O Devi Gandharva, falling on the ground like a rod, I, an extremely distressed soul, beg you to please count me as one of your near and dear ones. When will I dress you in a cloud-colored sari? When will I be able to massage your feet? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that we get trained under the assistance of Radha Krishna. So you can say, well, this is a very high version. Well, I thought you said this is applicable even to us in the beginning. But it very much is. Even if this is the first day that we've ever contacted Bhakti Yoga, we can have at least enough authenticity to say, you know, I'm not exactly the person I wish I was. How I present myself to the world and what I know I really am in my heart is not the same. Please, dear Lord, you come and purify me. Give me spiritual life, not just externally, but internally. Make me real. Make me authentic. And give me the shelter, not only of you as the Supreme Father, but also of the Supreme Mother. Let me be there holistically under the shelter of the divine. So anyone can pray like this, even in the very, very, very beginning, even if you're not praying like this from the point of view of a realized soul. Okay, now we're getting more detailed, and we're going to go into Raghunathdasa Swami again. This verse is for a fully realized soul. And how they can meditate on the divine personalities of the spiritual world. Yes, did you have a question on 8?
Yeah, before we go to the next one.
Okay.
Is there a point, like at 8, could someone start going backwards? Could something happen where they start? Is this the point of no return, or?
This is generally the point of no return. I mean, you're probably not even going to go backwards after three. Once you have saragam, you're probably not going to go backwards. You could get stuck.
But there's no.
Could be. I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the ultimate desire to be famous as a saintly person is the root of everything else. And if you don't get that out, the other things can come back. Because the desire for honor and prestige leads to pretense, which is the whole donkey urine problem. And if you're pretending to be spiritual, then event, you're not going to get any taste from your, or very little taste in your spirituality. If you're not getting any much taste in your spirituality, you're going to start engaging in material actions. And if you're engaging in material actions, you're going to be talking about materialistic things. So ultimately, if you don't root out this desire for prestige and fame, the other stuff can come back. It is possible. But texts say, you know, you're done here. Could you go back? Yes, free will is always there. Perfection doesn't mean becoming a robot. So, but you won't. You could, but you wouldn't. Once you see illusion for what it is. You know, the people that make the Hollywood movies, they don't see them the way the viewers see them. They know that's just a facade. And they know that the two lovers on screen actually hated each other. You follow? They know that. They know that when the two people are on screen screaming at each other, actually they film them at different times. My sadhakeshwar, who traveled with Bhakti Chuswami's theater group, he said, doing the videos of Prabhupada, he said the most shocking thing to him is that when two people were talking to each other, they weren't usually filmed at the same time. So, you know, when you make the film, you know. And you don't see it like everyone else. When you're in the magician's guild and you watch the magician make the birds come out of the hat, you don't see it the way other people see it. Does that make sense? You're not fooled by it anymore. So once the curtain is withdrawn and you see illusion for what it is, it loses its attractiveness. As long as we have some desire to pretend to be great other than being who we are, who is truly great, we require illusion, just logically speaking. If I want to pretend to be great in a way I'm not actually great, I require some sort of illusion. When I give up that root desire, I don't require any illusion anymore. Why would I go back to it? The reality is so much greater and more wonderful. But you can. There's nothing intrinsically to prevent you. It's not like you're shackled to, you know, expanding bliss. And you can't leave it. Is that okay? But even from, you know, Prabhupada says until we achieve steadiness, it's a hard struggle with determination, and after that everything comes very easily. Just the point of view of steadiness, it's, you know. The main way you can lose this is if you are offensive to others, especially to saints. But why would you be offensive at this level? You don't have the drivers to be offensive anymore. You don't have the internal impetus. You follow? What pushes us to be offensive is wanting to say that I'm great, and therefore I have to say that you are not. So if I don't have some desire to be great, if I'm happy to let God be great, and I'm satisfied in my greatness as being beloved by Him, if that's enough greatness for me, then why would I offend it? Anything else on 8 before we go to 9? Yes?
When you say taking shelter, what does it mean? Like, for me, it's just a word. Like when we ask, take shelter of Vishnu, Samadhi, Radha, and Tulsi Devi,
Okay, well, surrender has six parts. Anybody know the six parts of surrender? To accept things that are favorable. To reject what's unfavorable. What else? To have some humility. To feel that this person is my protector and this person is my maintainer. And to not have a separate interest. Again, think about it materially. Suppose you get a job working for, you know, Walmart. So if you're a good, loyal Walmart employee, you will do things that will benefit Walmart. You will not do things that will harm Walmart. Right? If you're a good employee. Yes? You'll not say you're the company president when you're just a stock boy. You'll be honest about your position. You'll have a sense that Walmart is maintaining you and they're taking care of you, and you'll align your interests with that of the company with which you work. Right? Do we all feel that America is giving us some shelter no matter how terrible our government is? Yes, of course we do. What does that mean? It means I try to do things that are good for the country. I mean, we may disagree what that is. You may think something's good that I may disagree, but we try to do things that are good for the country. We try not to do things that are harmful to the country. We see ourselves as just a citizen of the country. We don't artificially think that, you know, we're the most important person for the good of the country. We see that this country is maintaining us. It's providing, you know, roads and water and electricity and schools, yes. It's protecting me. It's got the police force. It's got the military. And I try to align my interests with the country. These are material examples. Obviously, they have problems with them. But you can get the idea. So the country becomes my shelter. Now, America is a terrible shelter because it's material. And so is Walmart because it's material. But the same principle is there with Krishna. So I see that God is my shelter. That means I do things that will help me come close to Him. I avoid things that will take me away from Him. I admit who I really am. I don't try to artificially have some position that's not what I am. I have an authentic relationship with Him. I see that He's maintaining me. Is God maintaining me?
Yeah.
Who's going to say God is on me? Is God protecting me? And I try to align my interests, like Jesus said, you know, thy will be done. I try to have my interests aligned with His. I see, okay, what does Krishna want for the world? Let me want that also. Like there's a very famous prayer that all the Hindus say, may everyone be happy. Krishna wants everyone to be happy. So if I'm taking shelter of Krishna, then I also want everybody to be happy. So if I'm taking shelter of Radharani, what does she want? She wants Krishna to be happy. She wants everybody to experience their original position of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So then I want that too. Does that answer your question? Okay, can we go into verse 9? Or does somebody else have something else they really want to bring up on 8? Okay, ready?
Marisha Nata Ve Vraja Vipina Chandra Vraja Vane Swarita Nata Ve Tara Tula Saki Ve Tula Vitam Vishaka Shisha Vive Tara Naguru Ve Kriya Saro Kirindra Tapresha Vaita Ratita Ve Smaravana.
Oh my, meditate on Krishna, the moon of the Vrindavan forest, as the lord of my leader, Sri Radhika. Meditate on Sri Radhika as his most dear object of love. Meditate on Sri Lalita as her incomparable friend. Meditate on Sri Vishakha as the foremost guru distributing the teachings of love. And meditate on Radhakund and Govardhan as givers of the sight and love of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. So this meditation that Raghunathas Goswami is asking, this is, again, he's speaking primarily to the self-realized soul who sees they have a particular relationship with Krishna, and they're meditating on the specific personalities and places that nourish their particular relationship. So our understanding of perfection is that it's full of personality and variety. We don't see perfection as just a white light. And each of us have a different specific mood in relationship to Krishna, and we have specific personalities that nurture our mood. So if someone's relationship with Krishna is as a friendly cowherd boy, who would they be meditating on? Subal, Sridham, more than Lalita and Vishaka. So Raghunathdasa Swami is giving this as his meditation for his mind. Those who awaken in other ways will have a slightly different meditation. And this this painting is based on a description from Ananda Vrindavan Chanku. And he's telling his mind very specifically how to meditate. Krishna as the Lord of his leader, Sri Radha, this relationship between the Supreme and his pleasure potency. And Radha as his most beloved. So there's this relationship of lover and beloved, which is the archetype of what we see in this world. And Krishna having so much devotion to Radha. And Bhaktivinoda says, O Radhika, the servant of yours has fallen into the depths of various oceans of distresses. Through the boat of your mercy, please rescue this servant. So this is a mood of shelter. And he says to meditate on Vishakha as the teacher. She's teaching the residents of Vrindavan how to decorate with flowers. She's teaching Radha in the form of Ramananda Roy. She's teaching Lord Chaitanya. And then Vishakha also appears as the river Yamuna. So the river is a person, is this goddess Vishakha. And here she is with her brother Yamaraj, the lord of death, and her father Suryadev, and a prayer that, please, Yamuna, please save me from the lord of death. Please save me from punishment and bring me to the supreme abode, the beautiful river Yamuna. And Lalita as Radha's friend. So much personality and relationships are there in the spiritual world. It's not simply some place of just light. So Raghunathdasa Swami is asking us to meditate on these divine personalities, Radha and Lalita. This is Yasoda praising Lalita near Radha and Vishakha. Lalita and Radha, and how Lalita is dancing for Radha and Krishna. And then we talked about in the beginning love for spiritual places. So especially Radha Kund, the holiest place, which can bring us to divine love, and especially Govardhan Hill, which again manifests in this world, but is also a link, a bridge to the divine world. Someone was asking one time, like, why we worship Tulsi and why we worship Govardhan. So most of you are familiar with C.S. Lewis's Narnia books?
Yeah.
Yes? So as I was a teacher of children for many years, so we had those books in our library. So, you know, in his books, they go to this other world, right? The children go to another world, and they plant a seed for a tree from that other world, and the wood grows, and then they use the wood to make a closet. You familiar with this? And when they walk in that closet, it becomes an entranceway to the other world because it's made with wood from that other world. So these kind of stories have some parallel in reality. The word Tirtha, which means a holy place, literally means a ford in a river or a bridge. It means a place where worlds and consciousness connect. So these holy places, these places like here, Govardhan Hill, or like Radhakund, they're a tirtha, where when we go to these places, or even think about them, we can cross into another reality. We can cross from this dimension, this earth, and this earthly consciousness into spiritual consciousness. The same as with, like, wearing this tulsi wood around our neck. So tulsi is really, she's a plant that exists in the spiritual kingdom, and she also manifests here. And by worshiping her and wearing her wood, we can get connected with this other realm. It acts like a bridge. Actually, places like Govardhan and Radhakund are even more extraordinary than ordinary tirtha. Beyond a tirtha, they're called a dham. And dham means they're not just a bridge to the sacred, they are a direct manifestation of the sacred in this world. And again, even a beginning person can have respect for these sacred places and love for these sacred places, even if they're not absorbed in them as part of their eternal rasa. And we manifest these sacred places here in our temples, that one can have, you can have love and affection for Krishna House. I mean, that sounds maybe a little silly, but it's not. It's not. The holy places are manifest here. Not exactly like the Dham that's always manifest in that particular place in the material world, but more like a Tirtha, that it's a place where you can cross, where you can touch the divine, you can experience the divine. And we should meditate on those places, or we can, as we talked about previously in verse 1, you can create a holy place in your home. You can create a place in your home that acts as a Tirtha, that acts as this fort, as this bridge. And we can all meditate on the personalities of the spiritual world. So we're very fortunate that Srila Prabhupada has given us what book specifically?
Krishna book.
And Krishna book is a book that Prabhupada had printed very early in the movement, and we went out and sold to the general public. And Krishna book talks about Govardhan Hill and Radhakund and Radharani and Krishna and Lalita and Vishakha and Subal and Sridham and Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj and the cows and the river Jamuna and all of these places. And even if you say, well, gosh, I'm just a beginner and I have no idea who I am and I haven't realized my eternal nature, what does this verse have to do with me and why are you teaching this angel? This is completely ridiculous. But anybody can pick up Krishna book and read it and meditate. And as people new to Krishna consciousness, we were every evening. We used to remember that? We used to sit and read Krishna book every evening. The Prabhupada would say, read this Krishna book and you would dream about Krishna. So anyone, from the very beginning, what's nice about Krishna book is that Srila Prabhupada has interwoven philosophy with the stories, so that one will not misunderstand them or misapply them, and one will not jump to things for which one is not ready. Any questions on text 9? Yes.
This is totally probably not true, but is the holy name kind of like a Tirtha?
It's more like a Dham. A Dham is permanent. One devotee gave the example that there's high ground and then there's ground with fences around it, walls around it. When there's a flood, the high ground doesn't get flooded, and if you have a high enough wall, it also doesn't get flooded. So we can, or you can also say there's the country and the embassy. The country is the country, the embassy acts like the country, but it may not always be there. So it's described that when this whole universe is destroyed, the Dhams remain. They don't become destroyed. They're not really part of this world at all. They appear to be part of this world. You go there and you think, I'm in India or I'm in this place, you know, but you're not really. You may not be able to fully perceive it, depending on your level of consciousness. So those are the Dhams. And then there are the Tirthas. The Tirthas are the forts, the bridges, the places that you can cross. And they may be manifest or unmanifest. They may, you know, whenever a holy person goes someplace, wherever they are is a Tirtha. They're supposed to be a walking Tirtha. Whenever you meet a saintly person, they are, Prabhupada, speaking about how the holy person is a Tirtha, he said, chanting Hare Krishna means you make a diamond throne in your heart. He said, you imagine you have a diamond throne in your heart, and Krishna is sitting on it, and you're bathing him with Ganga and Jamuna water, and you're dressing him, and you're ornamenting him. And then he said, this is not false, it is real. Although we use the word imagine. He said, it's not false, it is real. He said, and if you chant Hare Krishna and you meditate on Krishna like that, then wherever you go becomes a Tirtha. You're carrying Krishna in your heart. So you can become a walking Tirtha. And wherever you go, like the places that Srila Prabhupada went, are also Tirthas. Will that be so in 10 million years? No. The whole planet gets destroyed, the whole universe gets destroyed, those places become gone. You follow? But the Dham remains. So before Krishna House was here, whatever was here before, it wasn't a Tirtha before. And if sometime, you know, whatever, 3,000 years from now, the Krishna House closes, and something else is here, there may still be some power for some time, but eventually Even like the holy rivers, it's explained that when sinful people bathe in the holy rivers, they deposit their sins. And the same persons have to come again to purify them. So the churches have to be constantly purified and restored. But the Dhammas, they don't need any. They may need someone to reveal them, but they don't need anyone to restore them. So there's so many of a difference. Does that make sense to you? Well, what we would like to create for ourselves is, as I said, we'd like to be walking tirthas. And we would like to have, because we can find connections to the divine in everything. Now, certain places are particularly powerful, and even if you don't know about them, as soon as you come to them, you find some sort of transport. But we would like to have everything out like that. Actually, the way a tirtha even remains some power after it stopped for some time. We had a Gurukul in North Carolina, and we had fixed up the downstairs of a building as a devotional school. And every day for years, all the children were chanting Bhagavad Gita verses, and we were reading the Bhagavatam, and we were doing all these spiritual activities there. And then at one point, we closed and we were selling the building. So the building was empty. There hadn't been a school going on there, I don't know. 2 years maybe, and the building had just been empty. And I was living right next door. So we had the building advertised with a realtor. And one time I came back in the afternoon, and I was working at the time, so I was just wearing like a business suit. I wasn't obviously a Hare Krishna devotee. So I came back in the afternoon from work, and there were these couple guys hanging around without a realtor, which was like, what are you doing here? They said, well, we came here in the morning with the realtor, but I wanted to, you know, kind of come back and check it out. I was really struck by this place. I said, well, what about it? They said, there's some kind of really amazing energy. They didn't know that it had been a Hare Krishna school. They said, we just wanted to come back on this property. And I was thinking, even though the building had been vacant for 2 years, there was still something there from the fact that all this chanting and all of this service had gone on in the place. But you know, if somebody, I mean, right now the devotees are living there. But you can imagine if the building got taken over by somebody else doing something else, eventually that would be, the energy would dissipate. Okay, you ready for text 10, which is the last verse of Impeachment?
Ratin Gori Vilaya Pitapati Sandarya Kiranai Shachi Lakshmi Satya Pari Bhavati So Bhagya Bhavanai Pashi Skaraj Chandra Vali Mukha Navi Navraja Sati Shita Charaya Tamari Daita Ranam Bhajamana
O mind, offer your worship unto Sri Radhika, the beloved of Lord Hari. She outshines Rati, the wife of Kamadev, Gauri, the wife of Lord Shiva, and Leela, the potency of Lord Vishnu, by the effulgence of her beauty. She defeats Shakti, the wife of Indra, Lakshmi, and Satya, Krishna's wife, by the waves of her good fortune. She defeats the pride of the newly married gopis of Raja, headed by Chandravali, through her power to control Krishna. So Radha is a supreme goddess. Actually, she and Krishna are one in their identity. God is both male and female, but they also exist eternally as two separate persons for pastimes. She's the potency, she's the Lord's own potency called Ladini, or the pleasure potency. And she's identical with Krishna. She embodies love, she gives Krishna pleasure, and she nourishes all the devotees. So by the energy of Radharani, the Supreme Mother, everyone is engaged in the service of the Supreme Father, and she gives great bliss to all the devotees. So this is now full shelter under the internal energy. Meditating on the spiritual personalities, on the holy Dhamma, and entering fully into the spiritual potency. So here we're showing that even the great demigods, you know, what in other traditions they call the angels and the archangels, they're all worshipping Radha, who's the supreme goddess. She's the moonlight of bliss for the white lotuses. She's a golden color, and it said her braid looks like a snake. So there was some controversy on this. Sanatana Goswami says, I don't think it's very respectful to say her braid looks like a snake. I don't think this is a good description. And his brother says, no, it's like that. Sanatana disagreed. But there's disagreements, you know. Faith doesn't mean just mind faith. Even Sanatana Goswami disagreed with Rupa Goswami. So while he's meditating and chanting, he sees some young, beautiful girls talking and giggling nearby. And he sees there's a snake climbing on the back of one of them. He says, girls, girls, there's a snake, there's a snake. And that girl laughs and turns around. He sees it's her braid. And then they disappear. And then he goes to Rupa and he says, yes, that is braid, it's not a snake. So she's the beloved of her father, Vrishabhani. So how is it that Radha and Krishna can have parents when they are the mother and father of everyone? How is that? So this is a loving relationship. It's not really Krishna, it's Anadir Adir Gopita. He's the beginning and he has no beginning. And Radha also, she's the beginning with no beginning. But yet there are those who out of love want to take this role as like their father and mother. And she's the... She defeats the pride of all of the other young damsels. And this is a wonderful painting of all the paintings we have in this book. This is my favorite. This is showing when Krishna returns to the Ras dance with the gopis. And this is not the Arayas eight gopis, but these are the eight principal gopis. Very rarely do you see a depiction of them. And here Radharani is, she said, oh, Krishna, why did you leave the Ras dance in the middle? And now you come back. So this is the sweet relationship between Radha and Krishna. And Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, climb in the boat of the gopis' mercy to bring you to the feet of Radha and Krishna. So any questions on Ted? How can we meditate on Radharani even in the beginning of Bhakti Yoga? How can we take shelter of Radharani even from the beginning? It's right in front of you, by the way. Yes, in Lord Chaitanya. So Chaitanya is Krishna in Radharani's mood, and Radharani being the personification of compassion. So, you know, the word preach isn't a very favorable word in modern society, but sharing, perhaps, Prabhupada would say preaching. But by sharing love of God with others. And that's the opposite of that wickedness, isn't it? It's the opposite of wanting to be happy at others' expense. Is wanting to share my happiness with them. And even wanting them to excel me. Wanting everyone in the world to become more enlightened than I am. And to become more filled with love of God. So this is the real way in which we take shelter of Radha. It's not just simply some sort of, you know, sentiment. Oh, Radha is the greatest. Radha is the greatest. So any questions at all on Ted? Or anything that we discussed tonight or in the previous nights? Yes?
Well, I just had this thought from way earlier when you were talking about our dirt not being our own. Mm. And it was I was thinking about how we always, if we have some good quality, we always say, well, that's Krishna's quality, it's not mine. But then with our dirt, we always say, oh, I'm so terrible. So do you have anything more to say to expound on?
We really are wonderful. We're part of God. We're not as powerful as He is, but we're almost as wonderful as He is. We're part of Him. So, no, the dirt is not our own. Our wonderfulness is because we're part of Him. If we try to be wonderful separate from Him, then we're not so wonderful anymore. You know, so it's like if you have a dance troupe and somebody wants to, instead of working in sync and in harmony, they want to just act on their own. Then the dancers will start bumping into each other and falling off the stage. And you guys are musicians. So each musician has their own beauty in their singing or their instrument playing. But if somebody just decides they want to sing differently from everyone else and become the prima donna and outshine everybody else, that it becomes disharmonious. I was just thinking, there's this, I think it was a neurosurgeon who ended up having one of these near-death experiences, and he said, what I experienced was that in the spiritual reality, that there's billions of souls all singing their own tune, but they're all in harmony with each other. And it's complete harmony, and yet you can make out the different individuals. So it's when we try to be the biggest, when we try to say, I'm going to outshine others, then we accept the dirt that's not ours, not ours, it's not who we are. I was giving the example of smoking. That's not part of the body. The smoke and the tar that accumulate in the lungs from smoking, that's not an integral part of the body. It's something foreign that's been put on the body that needs to be cleansed, but it's not the body. It's not a part of the body. So the things in ourself that we don't like, and we all have things that we don't like about ourselves, they're not really ourselves. We are all eminently likable and lovable, actually. We're wonderful. We're very powerful. We're very beautiful. We're very eternal. But not separately from the whole. We're wonderful as part of the whole. Prabhupada talks about the sparks of the fire. The spark leaving the fire loses its brilliance very quickly. But in the fire, all the different sparks are beautiful. Is that okay? Therefore, when the devotee sees, I have this wicked, cheating nature, they're not depressed about it. They're regretful and apologetic, but they're not depressed because they see it's not them. Yes?
In regards to yesterday's class about the donkey room, if someone is in that stage and they don't get out of it, what type of birth would they have? Like in their next life, would they be like very demigods or very pious, or just back to like here trying?
Well, that's a very individual. I mean, what does Krishna say? He says that you take birth as a celestial being, or you take birth in a rich family, or you take birth in a very pious family, or you take birth in a family of yogis. It depends on where you are in the process and your particular desires. But one of those births. So there's so many higher planets of celestial beings, that depends. And it depends your particular kind of pretense. If your pretense was I'm a great sage and a great scholar, then you could go to the planets of the sages, or you could take birth here as a great devotional sage. You know, that depends on you. And what your particular attachment is. I mean, you can take this however you want to take it, but I know one devotee, one of the most advanced and serious devotees that I know, actually. And this person has the body of a Western female. And she used to be training all the brahmacharis in Mayapur. She knows fluent Bengali. She's a scholar, up, down, back and forth, and inside and out. And I mean, incredible scholar and very realized devotee. And I said to her, how in the world did you become a white woman in this life? And she told me that she heard from many astrologers and she's had many of her own visions and realizations. She says, I was a Bengali sannyasi. And before she became a devotee, she was in the final stages of training to be an acharya of mystic yoga. And she's had a life, her whole life, she's been austere and celibate, and she's very unusual. And I said, but okay, how a white woman? She said, well, the British were in India. And I didn't like that they were bringing in British culture. And I particularly thought their women were destroying our culture. So, you know, there was a feeling of superiority, yes. So, you know, we have exactly where we go, that depends. What's our particular attachment? What is our particular kind of pretense? How are we seeing ourselves that's not so spiritual, but that we think is? You can see how that's something you might think that is spiritual. You know, I want to keep our traditional culture, but it wasn't. So that it's very individual. Can't do that.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Yeah, you can take that story however you want. You don't have to leave it if you want to. Anybody else? Okay, so tomorrow we're going to get into the five nectars, which again can be done by anybody at any level. And then we're going to get into the benediction and talk a little bit about the glories of the Holy Dham. Thank you all very, very much for staying with us all the way here, almost to the end. Raghunathas Goswami ki jai. Raghunathas Goswami ki jai.